And welcome to the Poetry Show here on enlightenradio.org. My name is John Case, and my good friend and longtime host here on the show, Janet Harrison, has been taking a break. She put together 250 shows, all the different poets, and we're going to keep the tradition going here, but do something a little different, and she's going to return here at some point, but we're... she's taking a break. She has a lot of family matters that have been arisen in the past year, and we wish her well. Love her. She's got a great insight into poetry, and she's introduced us to so many new poets over the years here on the Winners and Losers radio program and other versions here of our radio effort. And so today we're going to be doing some thrills and chills, some Halloween poetry. Some of which I'll read, and some of which I got some recordings of. Keep you a little bit shivering as you head into the holiday season here, the Halloween season, which lasts a long time here. It takes a while to get. We'll be still getting rid of it, getting ready for it next week. But next week I'm going to do some stories. This week we're going to do poems, and. Anyway, the first one I'm going to deal with here is called The Haunted Oak, and it's by a poet named Paul Laurence Dunbar. And let me get you a little bit of information on Paul Laurence Dunbar for a minute here. We can do that. One of the first influential African-American poets in American literature, he enjoyed his greatest popularity in the early 20th century following the publication of dialectic verse in collections such as Majors and Minors, Lyrics of a Lowly Life. But the dialectic poems constitute only a small portion of Dunbar's canon, which is replete with novels, short stories, essays, many poems in standard English. In its entirety, Dunbar's literary body has been acclaimed as an impressive representation of African-American life at the turn of the century in America. His good friend, James Weldon Johnson, noted in a preface to his Book of American Poetry, quote, Paul Laurence Dunbar stands out as the first poet from the Negro race in the United States to show a combined mastery over poetic material and poetic technique, to reveal innate literary distinction in what he wrote, and to maintain a high level of performance. He was the first to rise to a height from which he could take a perspective view of his own race. He was the first to see objectively its humor, its superstitions, its shortcomings, the first to feel sympathetically its heart wounds, its yearnings, its aspirations, and to voice them all in a purely literary form. So this is a poem by Paul Laurence Dunbar called The Haunted Oak. Pray, why are you so bare, so bare, O bough of the old oak tree? And why, when I go through the shade you throw, runs a shudder over me. My leaves were green as the best, I trow, and sap ran free in my veins. But I say, in the moonlight dim and weird, a guiltless victim's pains. I bent me down to hear his sigh. I shook with his gurgling moan. I trembled sore when they rode away and left him here alone. They charged him with the old, old crime and set him fast in jail. Oh, why does the dog howl all night long, and why does the night wind wail? He prayed his prayer, and he swore his oath, and he raised his hand to the sky. But the beat of hoofs smote on his ear, and the steady tread drew nigh. Who is it rides by night, o'er the moonlit road? And what is the spur that keeps the pace? What is the galling goad? And now they beat at the prison door. Ho, keeper, do not stay. We are friends of him whom you hold within, and we fain would take him away. From those who ride fast on our heels with mind to do him wrong, they have no care for his innocence, and the rope they bear is long. They have fooled the jailer with lying words. They fooled the men with lies. The bolts unbar, the locks are drawn, and the great open door open flies. And now they've taken him from the jail, and hard and fast they ride. And the leader laughs low down in his throat as they halt my trunk beside. The judge, he wore a mask of black, and the doctor one of white. And the minister, with his oldest son, was curiously bedight. Oh, foolish man, why weep you now? 'Tis but a little space, and the time will come when all those dread the memory of your face. I feel the rope against my bark, and the weight of him in my grain. I feel in the throe of his final woe the touch of my own last pain. And nevermore shall leaves come forth on the bough that bears the ban. I'm burned with dread. I'm dried and dead from the curse of a guiltless man. And ever the judge rides by, and goes to hunt the deer. And another ever rides his soul in the guise of mortal fear. And ever the man, he rides me hard. And never a night stays he, for I feel his curse as a haunted bough on the trunk of a haunted tree. The Haunted Oak. Paul Laurence Dunbar. An appropriate Halloween poem here for heading into the Halloween season. There's lots to be afraid of. And we're going to take it out in the open here a little bit. Because we just can't stop, can we? Okay, here's one called The Goblin Market. Christina Rossetti. A little bit different tone. For those of you who don't know Christina Rossetti, she's a 19th century poet. 1830 to 1894. And of all the Victorian women poets, posterity has been kindest to Christina Rossetti. Her poetry has never disappeared from view, and her reputation, though it suffered a decline in the first half of the 20th century, has been preserved to some degree. Critical interest in Rossetti's poetry swelled in the final decades of the 20th century, a resurgence largely impelled by the emergence of feminist criticism. And much of this commentary focuses on gender issues in her poetry and on Rossetti as a woman poet. In her lifetime, people were divided over whether she or Elizabeth Barrett Browning was the greatest female poet of the era. But in any case, after Browning's death in 1861, and critics saw Rossetti as the older poet's rightful successor, the two poets achieved different kinds of excellence, as is evident in Dante Gabriel Rossetti's comment on his sister, quoted by William Sharp in the Atlantic Monthly all the way back in 1895. Quote, she's the finest woman poet since Mrs. Browning by a long way. And in artless art, if not in intellectual impulse, is greatly Mrs. Browning's superior. So, youngest child in a gifted family, and here's one called The Goblin Market. Morning and evening, maids heard the goblins cry. Come by, our orchid fruits. Come by. Apples and quinces, lemons and oranges, plump unspecked cherries, melons and raspberries. Bloom down cheeked peaches, swart headed mulberries, wild freeborn cranberries, crab apples, dewberries, pineapples and blackberries, apricots and strawberries, all ripe together in summer weather. Morns that pass by, fair evenings that fly. Come by. Our grapes fresh from the vine, pomegranates full and fine. Dates, pears and green gages, dates and sharp boluses, damsons and bilberries. Taste them and try. Currants and gooseberries, bright fire like barberries, figs to fill your mouth, citrons from the south, sweet to tongue and sound to eye. Come by, come by. Evening by evening, among the brookside rushes, Laura bowed her head to hear Lizzie veiled her blushes. Crouch in close together in the cooling weather, with clasping arms and cautioning lips, with tingling cheeks and fingertips. Lie close, Laura said, pricking up her golden head. We must not look at goblin men. We must not buy their fruits. Who knows upon what soil they fed their hungry, thirsty roots? Come by, called the goblins, hobbling down the glen. Oh, cried Lizzie, Laura, Laura, you should not peep at goblin men. Lizzie covered up her eyes. Cavert, close, lest they should look. Laura reared her glossy head and whispered like the restless brook. Look, Lizzie, look, Lizzie. Down the glen tramp little men. One hauls a basket and one bears a plate. One lugs a golden dish of many pounds weight. How fair the vine must grow whose grapes are so luscious. How warm the wind must blow through those fruit bushes. No, said Lizzie. No, no, no. Their offers should not charm us. Their evil gifts will harm us. She thrust a dimpled finger in each ear, shut eyes, and ran. But curious Laura chose to linger, wondering at each merchant man. One had a cat's face. One whisked a tail. One tramped at a rat's pace. One crawled like a snail. One like a wombat, proud, obtuse, and furry. One like a rattle, tumbled, hurry, scurry. She heard a voice like the voice of doves, cooing all together. They all sounded full of loves in the pleasant weather. Laura stretched her gleaming neck like a rush-embedded swan, from a lily, from a deck, like a moonlit poplar branch, like a vessel at a launch when its last restraint is gone. And backwards up the mossy glen turned and trooped the goblin men with their shrill repeated cry, come by, come by. And when they reached where Laura was, they stood stock still on the moss, leering at each other, brother and queer brother, signaling each other, brother with sly brother. One set his basket down, one reared his plate. One began to weave a crown of tendrils, leaves, and rough nuts brown. Men shall not, such in my town. One heaved the golden weight of dish and fruit to offer her. Come by, come by, was still their cry. Laura starred, but did not stir. Longed, but had no money. The whisk-tailed merchant bade her taste in tones as smooth as honey. The cat-faced purred, the rat-faced spoke a word of welcome, and the snail-paced even was heard. One parrot-voiced and jolly cried, pretty goblin, still for pretty Polly. One whistled like a bird. But sweet-toothed Laura spoke in haste, good folk, I have no coin. To take where to purloin. I have no copper in my purse. I have no silver either. And all my gold is on the furze that shakes in windy weather above the rusty heather. You have much gold upon your head, they all answered together. Buy from us with a golden curl. She clipped a precious golden lock. She dropped a tear more rare than pearl. Then suckled their fruit globes, fair or red, sweeter than honey from the rock. Stronger than man-rejoicing wine, clearer than water flowed that juice. She had never tasted such before. How should it cloy with length of use? She sucked and sucked and sucked the more fruits which that unknown orchard bore. She sucked until her lips were sore and flung the emptied rinds away, but gathered up one kernel stone and knew not was it night or day as she turned home alone. Well, Lizzie met her at the gate full of wise upbraidings. Dear, you should not stay so late. Twilight is not good for maidens. Should not loiter in the glen in the haunts of goblin men. Do you not remember Jeannie, how she met them in the moonlight, took their gifts, both choice and many, ate their fruits and wore their flowers, plucked from bowers where summer ripens at all hours, but ever in the moonlight she pined and pined away, sought them by night and day, found them no more, but dwindled and grew gray. She fell with the first snow, while to this day no grass will grow where she lies low. I planted daisies there a year ago that never blow. You should not loiter so.
Nay,
hush, said Laura.
Nay,
hush, my sister. I ate and ate my fill, yet my mouth waters still. Tomorrow night I will buy more, and kissed her. Have done with sorrow. I'll bring you plums tomorrow, fresh on their mother's twigs. Cherries worth getting. You cannot think what figs my teeth have met in, what melons icy cold piled on a dish of gold, too huge for me to hold, what peaches with a velvet nap, pellucid grapes without one seed. Odorous indeed must be the mead whereon they grow, and pure the wave they drink with lilies at the brink, and sugar sweet their sap. Well, as you see, this debate between Lizzie and Laura over whether to drink and indulge the goblin men proceeds and does not end well. It's a very long poem, actually. Anyway, I'm going to read the end of it here. Days, weeks, months, years afterwards, when both these women were wives with children of their own, their mother hearts beset with fears, their lives bound up in tender lives. Laura would call the little ones and tell them of her early prime, those pleasant days long gone of not returning time, and would walk and talk about the haunted glen, the wicked, quaint fruit merchant men, their fruits like honey to the throat, but poison in the blood. Men sell not such in any town. Would tell them how her sister stood in deadly peril to do her good and win the fiery antidote. Then joining hands to little hands would bid them cling together, for there is no friend like a sister in calm or stormy weather to cheer one on the tedious way, to fetch one if one goes astray, to lift one if one totters down, to strengthen whilst one stands. You're listening to The Poetry Show on enlightenedradio.org, and we're going to take a little short little break, play a little tune, and we'll be right back. But what are we going to play? Well, I think what we're going to play is well, that's a good question. Anyway, it's we'll do my God, what are we going to do? We're going to do a Little Feet song that we're going to do. If I can get it going here. This is Little Feet.
Yeah. nominating and welcoming. Let's hear it. F. E.
Listening to some Halloween poems, some thrills and chills here on the Poetry Show here on the Winners and Losers radio program. And we're going to hit today, I guess we're going to do, let's do a little bit of, let me see if I can get my next guy up here, which is going to be, here's a dramatization of a famous poem, of course, by Edgar Allan Poe, maybe one of the most famous of the scary poems. Not as bad as some of his stories, but still spooky as heck, called The Raven. Well-known, famous poem. This is Christopher Lee, appropriate guy, reading it.
The Raven. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, While I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door. Only this, and nothing more." Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow. Sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more." Presently, my soul grew stronger. Hesitating then no longer, "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. The fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door." Darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the darkness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, "Lenore." This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, "Lenore." Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping somewhat louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind, and nothing more. Open here," I flung the shutter, when, with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird, beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. "Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou," I said, "art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. for we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door. Bird or beast above the sculptured bust above his chamber door with such name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further then he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered. Still I scarcely more than muttered. Other friends have flown before. On the morrow, will he leave me, as my hopes have flown before? Then the bird said, Nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by reply so aptly spoken, doubtless, said I, what it utters is its only stock and store, caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast, and followed faster, until his songs one burden bore, till the dirges of his hope, that melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore. But the raven, still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking evermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl, whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet violet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er. But whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er she shall press, nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer swung by seraphim, whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee. By these angels he has sent thee respite, respite and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, O quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter sent, or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate, yet all undaunted, on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore. Quoth the raven. Nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend. I shrieked, upstarting, get thee back into the tempest and the night's plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken, quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the padded bust of Pallas just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore.
For a little Dixie Chicken after that.
I've seen the bright lights of Memphis and the Commodore Hotel, and underneath the street lamp I met a Southern Belle. Well, she took me to the yeah.
Well, welcome back to the Poetry Show here. Well, we got about, 8 or 9 more minutes to go here. A little Dixie Chicken following Christopher Lee's version of The Raven, which was indeed terrifying, as advertised. And so we're going to do, I'll be a couple of more Halloweenish poems here for you this morning. And I think we're going to try to keep the Poetry Show to about an hour going forward here. Let me see if I got my... Got a looseness issue here. I got my microphone. There we go. Much better. All right. So I think to continue here with the what should we do next? Oh yes. Okay. Well, we could we did The Raven. Okay. That's one of the most famous of all. And I think I'm going to do Rainer Maria Rilke poem. This is actually the poem of the week on our little blog site here, and it's called The Black Cat. And of course, it's got the resonance that almost every Rilke poem has, which is somehow it heads into the deeply spiritual and the right in front of you detail. he manages to do both at once almost always. Anyway, this is called The Black Cat. Rainer Maria Rilke, great German poet, world poet, 1875 to 1926. Died of leukemia or a blood cancer, I believe. And but one of the most prolific and profound, in my view, poets of all time. Anyway, it's called The Black Cat. A ghost, though invisible, still is like a place your sight can knock on, echoing. But here within this black, thick pelt, your strongest gaze will be absorbed and utterly disappear. Just as a raving madman, when nothing else can ease him, changes into his dark night, howling, pounds on the padded wall and feels the rage being taken in and pacified. She, referring to the cat again, seems to hide all looks that have ever fallen into her, so that like an audience, she can look them over, menacing and sullen, and curl to sleep with them. But all at once, as if awakened, she turns her face to yours, and with a shock you see yourself, tiny, inside the golden amber of her eyeballs, suspended like a prehistoric fly. The Black Cat by Rainer Maria Rilke. And can we do one more? We can do one more. I guess we got time to do one more. We're right there at the edge here. We ought to do one that's a little lighter than that, I think. You can burn really deep into Halloween. We'll do, I guess, the classic of all, which is Robert Burns, Halloween. Okay. Short poem. And of course, I wish I had a Scottish brogue to make it sound a little better, but I don't. I'm going to have to read it myself here. Robert Burns, 1759 to 1796. Died at 37 years old. Wow. I didn't know he lived so short. But, life was brutish and short for most of the centuries. We're blessed to live longer here now, at least some of us. Okay, so Halloween. Upon that night when fairies light, on Cassillis Downen's dance, in o'er the lays in splendid blaze, on sprightly coursers prance. As for Colleen, the route is taken beneath the moon's pale beams, there, up the cove, to stray and rove among the rocks and streams, to sport that night. Among the bonny winding banks, where Doon rins, wimpling clear, where Bruce ens ruled the martial ranks, and shook his carrack spear. Some merry, friendly country folks together did convene to burn their nets and pool their stocks and howled their Halloween for blithe that night. Hold on here, we gotta go. The lasses' feet and cleanly meet, mair braw than when they're fine, their faces blithe as sweetly kithe, hearts leal and warm and kin. The lads trig wi' woorabobs, wi'll knotted on their gotten, some unto blate and some with gabs. Got lasses' hearts starting whiles fast at night. Then first and foremost through the kale, their stocks maun be button ance. They steek thareen and grape their whale for muckle annins and straight ends. Poor Havel will fail aft the drift and wander through the bow kale and pult for want a better shift. A runt was like a so-tail. So I bolt that night. I bet you didn't understand a word of that. Oh, man. All right. Amazing, yes. All right. Ah, what offense is rank, it smells to heaven. It hath the primal eldest curse upon it, a brother's murder. Play, can I not through inclination be as sharp as will? My stronger guilt defeats my strong intent, and, like a man to double business bound, I stand and pause where I shall first begin, and both neglect. What if this cursed hand were thicker than itself with brother's blood? Is there not rain enough in the sweet heavens to wash it white as snow? Whereto serves mercy but to confront the visage of offense? And what's in prayer but this twofold force to be forestalled ere we come to fall, or pardoned being down? Then I'll look up. My fault is past, but oh, what form of prayer can serve my turn? Forgive me my foul murder? Well, that cannot be, since I am still possessed of those effects for which I did the murder. My crown, my ambition, my queen. May one be pardoned and retain the offense? If the corrupted currents of this world, offense's gilded hand may shove by justice, and oft it is seen the wicked prize itself buys out the law. But 'tis not so above. There's no shuffling. There the action lies in his true nature, and we ourselves compelled, even to the teeth and forehead of our faults, to give in evidence. Well, what then? What rests? Try what repentance can. What can it not? Yet what can it when one cannot repent? Oh, wretched state of a king! Oh, bosom black as death! Oh, limbed soul that, struggling to be free, art more engaged! Help, angels, make essay! Bow, stubborn knees, and heart with strings of steel be soft as sinews of the newborn babe. All yet may be well. I sing that as a Halloween gift to Mr. Trump. All right. Thank you for listening to the poetry show today on the Winners and Losers radio program, which is broadcast here, daily on days that are awake, on work days anyway, 8 at 7:30. And it's 6:30, and the days that we're here, we're doing the Moose Turd Cafe. And you listen to the news on the Moose Turd Cafe, the rest of the day is going to be better. And it starts with the poetry show. All right, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back in, we're going to play some music now for a little bit, and we'll be back soon. Here we go. Oh, someone just brought me some coffee. What a great thing. Wow, wow, wow. All right, enough of that. All right, we're going to pause this. This is the poetry show for October 16th, 2017. Take care of each other. It's late. but everything comes next. We'll close today with, what shall we close today with? I got a lot of things we could close with, but I always look for something appropriate if I can. We'll do... we'll do Friend of the Devil.
Take my time. friend of the devil is a friend of mine. I get home before daylight, just might get some sleep tonight.
So when we first signed to Geffen a long time ago, yes? What? Oh, I can't hear anything. Well, I guess I can hear what you're saying. I don't know what I'm saying. When we first signed to Geffen a long time ago, there was this other really cool Scottish band on the Scottish. They were.